afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you are listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adask, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today's Monday, July 24th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Good Monday to you, and gold struggled most of the day, but we're still holding at 1256. 1256 up, you know, half a buck on the day.
Half a buck is better than none, Melody.
In the New York spot price after market, we did have a high of 1259. A little bit of pressure in the markets. I believe the dollar was up a little bit, but I'll look here in just a moment. You have silver down 4 cents today at 1656. Platinum down five at $934, and palladium was up five at $856. The USDX today was trading down 0.02 at 93.95. Crude oil was up 62 cents at 46.39. Paper markets today, and the final numbers are still coming through, but we have the Dow down 31 points at 21,548. The NASDAQ was up 23 at 6410. The S&P was down 2, 2470. 10-year yield up 0.02 at 2.25%. And the little bit of pressure on Euro down 0.20, 116. European Asian markets, well, not a lot of change. London was down 1%. It's going to be an interesting week. I think Monday sort of started out fairly quiet, considering I think all eyes have been focused on Jared Kushner's interview in front of the Senate. And it was behind closed doors, so little things are beginning to come out, his statements and so forth. Couple of things that are happening this week. We have the UK begins post-Brexit trade talks with the US in Washington. China's going to post industrial profits for the last month. The US Central Bank is expected to make no change to policy on Wednesday. Let's see what else. The GDP follows the two-day Federal Reserve monetary policy. We'll see what that brings about. There's a few countries that are announcing any rate decisions. And, of course, you have quarterly earnings. You got Alphabet and Facebook are on the calendar this week to release their earnings, along with Deutsche Bank and some other ones, some other banks, UBS Group, AG. So, you know, it's I think you'll see a little more interesting markets later on in the week, but for a fairly quiet Monday. Interesting, Alfred, I had visitors, they're actually relatives of my, or family, friends of my relatives, and the wife is in a financial planning business. What was interesting is when we began talking about the markets and so forth, she says, we're just all waiting for the shoe to drop on the markets. So it's just not the, you know, conservative right, and you know, the extremes or shortwave or, you know, folks who sell gold that believe that the market is ready to have some sort of pullbacks. But most of your financial planners in Wall Street is all expecting the markets to pull back. Now, there was a little bit of a discrepancy to the degree of what it was going to do and why. But the idea that everyone is just sort of like, how long can this go? Because there are no fundamentals pushing it to these levels. And so it was kind of interesting to and enjoyable to at least have a conversation on the markets. And, you know, we were in agreement a lot on what is going to or what we can expect this fall. And so a lot of volatility and markets crashing. And we'll just have to see if we have the catalyst that truly drops the markets and our debt markets in free fall. And certainly China is going to be a major, maybe not a major, but an important country to watch. I mean, all these major countries are trying to pull back on their monetary stimulus the same time that we're looking to, the Federal Reserve is looking to sell what they have on their books. And it's not going to be the same old, to where investors, the investors can rely on stability. So
the stability they've had is that the government keeps, or and or the Federal Reserve keeps pumping money. Ultimately, it winds up in the stock market, and it creates the illusion that you can't lose.
Absolutely.
And it just keeps rising and rising. There's no reason for it, but it's like Bitcoin in its own way. It keeps rising and rising, but nobody knows exactly why. Well, it's because people are putting more money into it. But why? Well, they put more money into it because they put more money into it. I mean, there's not a foundation reason where something is becoming more productive, it's becoming more profitable. No, it's simply, it's a glorified lottery.
Ponzi.
But for now, you're guaranteed to win.
Ponzi, Al.
Sure.
Ponzi scheme. But, yeah, you're absolutely correct. And so we're all waiting. We can't name the time, but we can tell you how serious and a lot of money people are going to lose. And once that first domino begins to break down all the other ones, there isn't anything to stop it for going to all the way to the end. Oil rose a little bit today. Oil rose as Saudi Arabia pledged deep cuts to its crude exports, while Halliburton Company said the shale boom is slowing down. OPEC's largest producer, Saudi Arabia, will limit exports to 6.6 million barrels a day in August, 1 million lower than a year earlier. Meanwhile, Halliburton, the world's top fracking services provider, said U.S. explorers are tapping the brakes as oil struggles to breach $50 a barrel. Oil remains in a bear market amid the concerns that rising global output will offset production curbs by members of OPEC. So, we've been
talking. There's actually a meeting today in St. Petersburg, Russia, where they're going to decide, or at least begin to decide, what's going on with how much will they produce, and they have a couple of problems. Ecuador wants to produce as much as it needs to produce. It claims it's got costs and therefore it can't keep the deal. A couple other nations, Nigeria and Libya, they have no deal. They were exempt from the original deal due to internal strife, and both have ramped up production greatly in the months that followed. And of course, the United States isn't part of the deal, and whatever we're doing in shale production is affecting oil production, total oil production around the globe. And they're claiming in the headline that this meeting, the headline here from the street says, OPEC, non-OPEC meeting in Russia will make or break oil prices. And part of the purpose of the meeting is to see whether anybody's keeping up with the production limits that were imposed basically a year ago.
Well, Halliburton is saying the drilling, the shale explorers, I mean, they have helped keep inventories high, but the drilling surge may be plateauing.
Yeah.
You know, Halliburton, the elite of the elite corporations, along with Carlyle.
one of the companies that actually runs this government rather than is supervised by the government?
Pretty much. Well, if anyone can remember Dick Cheney.
Yep.
So certainly,
well,
a lot hasn't changed.
You can ask why is, well, they're talking about U.S. oil shale production, shale oil production is perhaps going to slow down. Well, the question is why? The answer may be, maybe it's because they can't make a buck. That would be one answer. The other answer is that these prices are so low that they can't make a profit. That would be one answer. Another answer is they're just looking and saying, look, the market is flooded. If we keep producing this stuff, prices are going to continue to go down. It may be they just said, look, we can't keep fighting the market. There's too much oil out there. There's no point in us producing more when we can barely make a profit while other people can make a substantial profit. So which one is it, Melody? Is it just that this price is no longer profitable for oil shale or shale oil? Or is it that the market is so flooded that regardless of price, they can't make a profit? Do you see what I'm saying?
I think it's flooded, but there's also a lot of debt in there too. And, you know, so it's very difficult with these lower prices. Now, I'm sure perhaps a lot of that debt was, you know, restructured and so forth. But you know, when you drop from as low as we did in oil prices, and it has been steady between the 40 and 50 level, and I think that's where they need to keep it. They're going to try to run it, but you know, I think if it stays at this level, you know, things will mellow out, prices will become stable, and so forth. You know,
yeah, but even
I think
if they
between
do.
40 and 50, and I've said that, you know, a year and a half ago, and that's where it's remained. Now, what the future holds for the oil prices, you know, if demand drops significantly after we have a situation that we expect to happen later on this year and into next year, you know, who knows where it might go.
Well, I understand. I've suggested before, I think you're going to see $30 a barrel oil before this is done, but who can
say? If we see $30 in oil, $30 barrel oil, we'll probably see, that'll probably equate to 2,000 gold. But anyway, here came some, Mr. Trump, I guess, made an announcement. He was scheduled to give some sort of a briefing. I don't know if it, what type of a press conference it was, but I did get the headlines on it. I think it started at 1 o'clock, but he was basically talking about Obamacare, and he declared Obamacare a meaningless promise. And he's amplified his calls for action on the Republicans to repeal and replace. I don't know where he gets his news. He says for the past 17 years, hasn't really been 17 years, but Obamacare has wreaked havoc on the lives of innocent, hardworking people. He attacked Democrats for a lack of bipartisanship on the bill and decried their messaging tactics against the GOP efforts. They say death, death, death. Well, Obamacare is death, Trump said from the Roosevelt Room as he stood flanked by families he called victims of Obamacare. That's the one that's death. He remarked amid failed pushes to repeal and replace. I don't know if he really said anything. Trump painted Tuesday's vote as a chance at redemption for Democrats and a moment of truth for Republicans who have long promised to get rid of the bill. Any senator who votes against starting debate is telling America that you are fine with the Obamacare nightmare. Democrats aren't giving us one vote, so we need virtually every single vote from Republicans, which is not easy to do. Trump has advocated for repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act. So he, I guess he publicly is giving the warning to do something to get it passed.
Do you think he'll be effective?
No.
I don't either.
No.
I don't either. I think he'll lose enough votes out of the Republican Party where nothing is going to change at the moment. But you talk about this business about death, death, death. They're saying, oh, my God, if we don't have free health care, and it's not free, that's for at least not for most people. If we don't have free health care, people are going to die. Well, yeah, but if you have free health care, other people who are forced to pay for it are going to be put under so much stress that it may contribute to their deaths also. I mean, you can't just impose incredible taxes on people who are already stressed and working for a living and trying to hang on to their part-time jobs. You can't just say, look, we're going to tax these people in order to provide free health care for people who aren't working. There's a problem here, and it can't be. And in the end, you have to side with the people that are productive. And if somebody wants to provide health care for the poor, all right, there's no reason why you can't have charity to do it. There's no reason why hospitals can't provide free care if they care to do so. I mean, it's easy to say and hard to do. I get that. But you can't just run this government on the basis of doing anything that feels good. I think we should have free airplane flights to Cancun every spring for everybody in the country. We're all going to Cancun, all right, for spring break. And the government is going to pay the tickets because we all need a vacation. Who's going to pay for the air flight? Who's going to pay for the peanuts on the air flight? Some poor SOB who actually works for a living. That's who's going to pay for it, unless the government goes into debt, in which case our children or our grandchildren are going to pay for it. But there's a point, and we're getting closer to that all the time. Nobody wants to go there, but this is where we're headed. We're headed toward a moment when we are forced to admit that you're not entitled to anything you don't earn. And if you haven't earned it, you don't get it. And it's not because people are mean. It's because people are in desperate circumstances. And in the end, we need producers more than we need consumers. And as long as that's true, fine, then we're going to have to side with the producers. Going to have to cut taxes and let them live. And I don't know what's going to happen. It's not an easy situation, but it's the way it's going to have to go if you continue to consume your producers. We'll just tax them into oblivion so the poor can live large. Sooner or later, you're not going to have any producers. And then what? Who's going to produce anything? Where are we going to get any food, products, whatever? It's not going to get to the point where no one produces anything. I'm exaggerating, of course, but I'm doing it to make, you know, illustrate a point. In the end, it's more important to have people who produce. That is to say, they produce more than they consume. Those are producers. Consumers produce something, generally, all right? But they consume more than they produce. And people are trying to make the world safe for consumers, and I think it's going to blow up in everyone's face, although it may be several years before it happens. We'll watch and see, but that's part of the problem that we're facing. Complete change of mindset. People are going to have to face the fact, if you don't earn it, you don't get it. And I guarantee there are going to be people in the country who will scream, riot, set fires when they find out, what are you talking about? You mean I have to have a job? Yeah. You mean I have to learn to read? Yeah. Have to learn to write? Yeah.
Have to
learn mathematics? Yeah. Got to show up on time?
English.
Yeah. So we're headed for a learning experience. And you know what's funny about this? You talk about you visited with, you had guests, and you're talking to the investment advisor or whatever you said she was doing. She agrees, just waiting for the other shoe to drop. Everybody knows this is coming. Mm-hmm. And nobody seems to care. No one seems to care. It's like everyone is boarding the Titanic. They're telling you, look, this thing's going to sink out in the Atlantic, the icebergs. And they said, yeah, it's okay, but we're going to have a great time. We're going to have a great trip in the meantime. Everybody's boarding the Titanic, and the warning is there. Nobody's paying attention. There's going to be a problem. Let's take some commercials. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. freedomradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
We have two little specials today. We have the 2020 and 20. I'm going to continue that. It's very popular. The 21-ounce American Silver Eagles, the 21-ounce Buffalo Silver Rounds, and $20 face value of 90% silver. And the price is back up to $1,015. It dropped a little bit, but the prices are climbing. $1,015, and that includes your shipping costs. 20, 20, and 20. 20 silver eagles, 20 silver rounds, and $20 face value of 90% silver, $1,015. It includes your shipping costs. Then we have a smaller package. And I do have some extra silver rounds in here. 20 silver rounds and a 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle includes your shipping costs, and that's $515. So you can have one or 100 of those, and just give us a call at 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. What's next, Al?
I got something here from Business Insider, and the headline is "A Big Fall in Markets is Coming as Traders Put Record Cash to Work." Well, this is kind of interesting, especially in the context of another article that follows right after this. It's kind of the opposite. It says, this is from Reuters, it says investors may be setting themselves up for a big fall, but they're enjoying themselves on the way up. And what they mean by that is the markets are rising, people understand it's a dangerous situation, but everybody's having such a good time that they're not going to bail right now. All right? As a result, they're going to probably suffer a crash, but they're sitting back saying, we don't care. You know, it's a little bit, this is part of the Titanic analogy I was using in the first segment of the program. So, yeah, we'll board the Titanic. It's not sinking today. It's not going to sink for another few days, so why not get on now? You know, maybe, who knows? Maybe we'll be able to get to New York without sinking. The article says, in global markets, all signs of sentiment are pointing up. Public sentiment is up. Now, what do we know about when all signs of public sentiment is up, Melody? What's that correspond to?
You tell me.
It corresponds to the sell high moment, when everybody is buying. That's when you sell high if you're smart. And what they're telling us here, all signs of sentiment are pointing up. And that's very, very unbridled enthusiasm. Unbridled enthusiasm. You know, this corresponds to Federal Reserve Greenspan talking about irrational exuberance. And the problem with irrational exuberance and unbridled enthusiasm is that they defeat the common sense that's inherent in you buy low and you sell high. As long as we are irrationally exuberant, or we have unbridled enthusiasm, right? We are dealing with emotions, which are not the most reliable way of investing, not the most reliable basis for investing, and they're putting you in a position where you may be vulnerable. Again, it's all of this sentiment, an enthusiastic sentiment, it could spell their downfall. Things show how overtly... things that show just how overtly bullish investors are feeling right now include, first, private client cash levels have dropped to a record low as a percentage of total assets. This means that investors are feeling more emboldened than ever to put their money to work in the market. They're not sitting on cash. They're not taking a wait-and-see attitude. They're investing or they're speculating now. Right? They're jumping in on this. Institutional investors are also holding the lowest levels of cash since the start of the 8-year bull market. Now, if this is the lowest level of cash in 8 years, again, that theoretically corresponds to this. It suggests that we are at or near the sell high moment. This is time to look out. All right, the skyrocket is just about out of fuel, and it's going to hit its apogee, if that's a correct term, and then start heading downward. Everybody's in this thing, and big time, and confidence alone will not sustain it. Second, the active equity funds just absorbed their biggest inflows in 2.5 years. This is a sign of confidence, not just for the market, but for fund managers that make their living picking stocks. Equity funds have had their biggest inflows. People are pushing money into the stock market, or some money's coming into the stock market. Whether it's coming from people or institutions might be debated, but they've had the biggest inflow in 2.5 years. Again, this suggests this is consistent with the idea that we may be at that sell high moment. Third and lastly, and perhaps the most direct reflection of swelling confidence, global markets are hitting records. Standard & Poor's 500 is more tech-savvy, and its more tech-savvy counterpart, the NASDAQ 100, hit all-time highs this past week. The gauges are up 265% and 466% respectively over the course of the bull market. All right, again, you know, this is good news, but the markets can't exactly stand good news when it gets too good. There's a point in time when it's not unreasonable to say, wait a second, can this continue? What's resulted is a so-called Icarus trade, which has been characterized by the melt-up seen in risk since the start of 2016. But there's a downside to flying too close to the proverbial sun. Sooner or later, your wings will melt. Bank of America Merrill Lynch sees this happening in the second half of this year. A big fall in the markets will be an autumn, not summer event. This is from strategists of Bank of America Merrill Lynch. And they also note that Icarus won't soar forever. So we've got Bank of America. That they're not prophecies. This isn't prophecy. But they're saying there's going to be a big fall in the markets. And it will be this autumn, not this summer. Got a couple more months to go before we hit the iceberg, essentially. But they're saying, yep, Titanic's headed for the iceberg. So where do we stand right now? And this gets me. Despite the gloomy late 2017 forecast for Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, it's actually a great time to be an equity investor. Right? Even though the Titanic's going to hit an iceberg, this is not a bad time to be a life preserver salesman on the Titanic. You stand to make huge profits, at least for a while. Assuming you get into the lifeboats before the ship sinks. There's a timing problem here. They're saying this is a great time to be an investor. I would say that no one going into the stock market right now can be accurately described as an investor. I'd say they're in it as speculators, at least most people. To say no one is there as an investor, that's not true. But most people are there as speculators. They're going to ride this thing. They know the end is near, but they're going to squeeze the last 50 cents, a dollar, $2, $10, however much they need, however much they can out of their stock and bet that they can bail out right before the crash hits. Well, and these guys are saying it's actually a great time to be an equity investor. I disagree. Company stock prices are moving more than ever on the earnings reports that are trickling out, representing a big potential windfall in the short term for traders willing to do their homework. I agree with that. For short term, yeah. You can get in the market and make a fast buck today, but I don't know that you can make a fast buck. You can invest money today and count on getting it back out 3 months from now. All right? 4 months. I don't know when it's going to happen. But there is a nearly universal agreement that we're headed for some sort of a serious correction. Jim Rogers was interviewed. I saw one of his videos. He's warning, look, this is going to be the darndest thing you ever saw. When this thing finally goes south, it's going to be a bad situation. You know, a night to remember, story of the Titanic. We're going to have a market to remember before this is all over. And the implications here, can't give you prophecy, but it certainly looks like we are at or near the sell high moment. And if we are, you know, you have to use your own judgment, see if you agree, you disagree. But if that's where we are, if you want to hang on. If you're going to maybe miss the peak and maybe get trapped in it and find yourself unable to sell and collect your last, you know, dollar, $10, whatever in profits. So a lot of people believe, and it's not, this isn't news, and yet, I'm not sure that I've seen anybody in the last 3 months. I don't mean a majority of people, but anybody in the last 3 months who said, oh yeah, everything's great in the markets. Everybody is warning there's going to be a correction. That doesn't mean it's going to happen, but everybody is pretty much unanimous. And yet the ordinary people, ordinary investors, they just aren't paying attention. The gurus are all confident that this is going to blow up in our faces, and the investors are all confident that it's going to continue to rise and rise and rise. Somebody's wrong. We'll see what happens. Somebody's wrong, but who's taking the biggest risk? If you're in a position to capture profits right now in the markets, and you're concerned that they're likely to fall, well, how much risk do you take if you capture your profits? What happens, let's suppose for the sake of argument, that you bought a stock for $10 and it's selling for $50. All right, suppose you sold it right now. Maybe it's going to go to $60 or $70 or $80, and all you do is capture your $40 in profits. You sell it at $50, and then you say, oh my gosh, you know, I sold way too soon. Well, it could be, but you did capture your $40 in profit. What if you hang on and you ignore the idea that maybe we're looking and we're at the, you know, that Titanic, the Titanic analogy might apply. You ignore that completely and say, no, I'm not going to sell. I'm going to hang on and hang on and hang on until the ship goes to the bottom. That's where the risk is. If you have the opportunity to capture profits now, it may turn out that it's not as much profit as you might otherwise have achieved, but at least you captured profit. If you hang on, you assume a riskier strategy because odds are you're going to miss the timing and you're going to suffer some sort of a significant loss. Now, maybe you can ride it up to the peak. And if you bought it stock at 10 and it's up to 50 now and it goes and it peaks at 100, maybe you'll be able to sell it at $80 and you get out and still have a substantial profit. It's not impossible. It's something you have to weigh and you have to consider, but it's increasingly looking as if those whose confidence is unshaken and those who believe that we can hang on to this market forever, they're the ones that are taking the greater risk as compared to those who are sitting back and say, time to actually secure my capital, secure my profits, and protect myself, because I really think there is an iceberg on the horizon. I really think the Titanic is going to hit that iceberg. Maybe right, maybe wrong, but protect yourself. That's my opinion.
And you know what? How high will the Dow go before it crashes? But everyone knows the crash is there, and no one ever gets out in time. because you people always, human nature, that you always think that something is going to go higher. Even if the Dow goes from where it is today to 25,000, people are still thinking it's going to go higher. And they never get out. They hold on, and then you'll have a big pullback, and then they'll say, well, it's going to reverse itself. It's going to go back up, and then it goes a little lower, and people are still holding. People are still waiting for it to go back up. You know, the old saying was, when we had for a long time, we probably still do, customers who are still holding gold from the first time it hit 50, or I'm sorry, silver was the first time it hit 50, and you know, we certainly have a lot now, but silver certainly is a lot closer to beating that $50 high that we've seen twice so far, and I think we're very close to that. But so it's now's the time. And even so, what if it goes up? And that's what people don't understand. So what if it goes up?
You know, a lot of people think that's a crazy statement, but Warren Buffett has. One of his primary principles in investing is don't lose money. It's too hard to replace the money that's lost. It takes great effort. And the point is, it sounds like a silly statement, don't lose money. Well, of course we don't want to lose money. No, don't lose money. Take the profit when you can, all right? Hang on to that profit in a form that's stable and is going to survive what's coming. But this is Warren Buffett, certainly one of the most famous investors in the history of the world.
Insiders.
Right? Don't lose money. First principle, all right? Which means you got to get out, you got to have sense enough to recognize that sell high moment, and you've got to bail before you get, all right, fine. It may be that you could have made another $10 or $20 on a share of stock, but nevertheless, don't lose money, because it's way more harmful to lose money than it is to lose potential profits. It's not just the same thing.
So
it's just, look, I either come out of this with $100 in my pocket, or I come out of it with $50 in my pocket. Take the $100.
There's been two times that I've traded options. The second time I did extremely well. But the first time, it was just beginning. This was back in the, oh, it would have been early 2000s. And the person I was trading with would sell when the profit was like $1,000. And it's like, what's the point? Well, the point was that we sold at $1,000 and we didn't lose. Yep. Even though if we would have hung on and maybe we would have made $2,000, but we sold at $1,000, which didn't seem like a whole lot of money being made, but we didn't lose. And that's what Al was talking about.
Yep. That's what Buffett's talking about. Okay, we'll take a break. More commercials. Be right back. Please stay tuned.
Just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, you know, I just want to bring, we talked a lot about Illinois and, you know, the pension debt problem they have and so forth. You know, well, Hartford, Connecticut, is the state capital, and it is the latest municipality to have its debt rating cut to junk. Moody's was the second credit agency to downgrade Hartford. That impacts about $500 million of outstanding debt. Plus, the downgrade comes as the city faces a, you know, a challenging liquidity outlook. The state, they can't go to the state. The state's pension obligations consume half the budget. A plunge in tax revenues puts the state in a weak financial position. And Connecticut has one of the nation's highest state of income tax rates. So, you know, we talk about, it's just not Illinois. You know, it's just not some of these cities like Detroit and different cities in California. It's everywhere. We're just not hearing about them until it gets to the point where, you know, the credit agencies, you know, finally give them a junk status. And we talked before about the problem of these credit agencies. You know, these downgrades should have come years ago.
Yeah.
You know, but they're part of the problem.
Yep.
You know, they are part of the problem. They create the illusion that things are still going. It allows these cities and states to get more debt to keep things going. Because once their credit gets dropped to junk status, that they can't attract capital. So
yep. You know, it defeats confidence.
Problem.
They have to maintain confidence in the market.
It's and not any different than the country.
Well, I understand. But you've got to be able to sit back. Confidence is certainly important, but all by itself, it's not enough. Can't just, it's not just, I think I can. You've got, if you're the little engine that, you know, you think I think I can, I can pull this load up over the hill or whatever. Well, that's fine if you've got some coal to throw into the boiler to make enough steam to pull it up over the hill. But you, if you do and you have that confidence, then yeah, you can pull that load up over the hill. But if all you've got is confidence and you don't have any coal, you're going to have a problem. You're not going to generate enough steam to get it over the hill. Confidence alone will not carry you. And government is, they have been focusing on this confidence, I think, since Henry Kissinger. And it may be they've been focusing on confidence forever. But Kissinger's amplified this to some degree when he said, this is during the Nixon administration, he said, reality is not important. What's important is the appearance of reality. And what he was saying is that from a political perspective, if you can fool people into mistaking the appearance of something for reality, that's what's important. And the reason he thinks it's important is because it can be done with propaganda. It can be done with, the president can stand up and deliver a great speech. Janet Yellen can deliver a great speech. And people respond, oh my God, Janet Yellen said yes, no, or maybe. Okay, but what else? We are being persuaded by the appearance. We are persuaded because we are setting record highs in the stock markets that the stock markets must be strong. They're not. They're subsidized. You know? They're subsidized indirectly, at least, by the Federal, or they have been, by the Federal Reserve. They're not strong on their own. And you got to wonder, well, the Federal Reserve, how long can they continue to subsidize the stock markets? And how long can they? How long will they? And what happens when they finally turn off quantitative easing and they say, that's it, we can't work with near zero interest rates anymore, we can't keep pumping money into the stock market? What's going to happen? Stock market is going to go down to whatever a real price should be, and it will probably, the momentum of the fall will probably carry it far below what a real price should be, and then it'll gradually work back up to whatever a true free market price should be. But how long can the Fed continue? How long can the government continue? I mean, we are providing these subsidies in order to maintain confidence, we're maintaining an appearance, and we are ignoring reality. And we talk about this on the program on a regular basis. We talk about fundamentals. What are we talking about? Talking about reality, some sort of a tangible reality. So, you know, and it's not easy to discover. There is so much BS, false numbers, intended to inspire confidence. Oh, people worried about the appearance more so than the reality. It's hard to even find good numbers that you can rely on anymore. But still, you are caught in a situation where you must make a decision. What are you going to do? Going to continue to ride this wave based on nothing but confidence? Is that what you're going to do? Or are you going to start looking at reality and say, maybe it's time to get off this wave? And I can't tell you exactly what to do. No one really can, but you must do something. And if you're going to sit there and just be apathetic and allow yourself to hope for the best, I don't think that's an effective investment strategy at this time. I think it takes more than confidence. Because in the end, right now, confidence in this system is all based on an emotional confidence. It's not confidence in fundamentals. It's confidence in other people keep maintaining their confidence. And if anything happens where all of a sudden the people turn the other way, they're going to turn, it's going to be like a stampede. And all of a sudden that confidence, because there's no reality to support it, no fundamentals to support it, when it goes, it's going to go, you know, it's going to crash. So, you know, we're warning you as best we can, and we're warning you that we think we're in a dangerous position right now. And but you're going to have to make the call. Your life, your wealth, your profits. You know, if you think,
what is the best way to protect the paper investments?
Get out of them.
And what do you do with? And what you're going to get is paper dollars, and what do you do with that? You get out of that, and you convert those paper dollars into gold and silver.
You could also make paper airplanes and throw them out of the 40th window of your business, Melody.
What's next, Al?
Let's see. I don't know. Where were we? We were talking about this big fall, and I don't think I got very far into it, but it makes some... Yeah, we did that one. Let me do the next one here. Here's researchers have a new theory for why companies are sitting on ungodly piles of cash. Now, we read an article here from Business Insider that says everybody's investing in the market. And yet here's another article from St. Louis Post-Dispatch that says researchers have a new theory for why companies are sitting on ungodly piles of cash, which they're saying they're not investing in the market. So we had one article says they are investing in the market. We got another one that says they're not investing in the market. And they go on and they say that's one of the most important yet least understood sources of ordinary Americans' economic frustration. U.S. companies aren't investing as much as they used to. When corporations don't invest or invest less, they put fewer people to work building factories, making equipment, and conducting research. But investment has slumped in the recent years, and researchers say there isn't any obvious or consensus reason for the investment slowdown. Now, two economists at New York University think they might have at least a partial explanation. In a paper published this week by the National Bureau of Economic Research, they argue that increasing concentration of economic power, increasing concentration of economic power, in the hands of a relatively few behemoth corporations, in some cases to the point where companies enjoy a near monopoly, could explain the pattern. The big firms, unconcerned about their competitors, simply have no need to invest in staying ahead. Now, this is an extraordinary hypothesis, and it really rings my bell. I think there's, assuming that the fundamental premise is correct, that companies are sitting on ungodly piles of cash, this is fascinating. The increasing concentration of economic power in the hands of a relatively few behemoth corporations. How's that achieved? It's achieved by having a high credit rating where you can borrow money from the bank that other people can't borrow. The big firms, unconcerned about their competitors, because they don't really have any, because they are very nearly monopolies, they have no need to invest in staying ahead. In separate research, the two economists found that market power has not become more concentrated in Europe. As a result, European markets are now more competitive than those in the United States, a remarkable shift in a country where free markets, that would be us, at least in the past, have long been not just a point of pride, but also a priority for national economic policy. Why have we lost our competition, Melody? And part of the reason is because the market is manipulated by government and the Federal Reserve. By pumping money into the market, they guarantee that corporations that would otherwise have been dragged down by competition survive. Our own government's market manipulation has necessarily deprived us of free markets. It has necessarily deprived us of market competition, and the result is not going to go well for anyone. Someone named Philippon. He's mentioned elsewhere on the Thomas Philippon. He's one of the authors of this report. He said it's a complete reversal. The U.S. has always been more pro-competition place, but that's not true anymore. Instead of investing, corporations have been paying more money out to Wall Street by issuing dividends and repurchasing shares. More troubling, economists are not sure why the corporations are not investing. One possibility is there are simply not many opportunities to make money. Well, why not?
How about just no demand?
Well, no demand, but why no demand? They say they suggest that the answer goes to an aging population. I think the answer may go to the idea that we have a near zero interest rate. It's in the interest rate environment that's been established by the Federal Reserve. How much money can you make? And if you can make money, is the risk worth the profit that stands to be made, at least on conventional interest rates? I think that's part of the reason. Again, this goes back to government meddling. Government says, we're here to protect you, the little people. Every time they show up to protect us, we get wrecked. They're not, it sounds like a good idea. President Reagan started the plunge protection team to protect the markets against sudden dramatic falls. Great. Sounds like a great idea, but what's the net result? If we can prevent the markets from falling dramatically, why not also stimulate the markets and make them rise artificially? The market manipulation we see right now is an inevitable consequence of President Reagan and his attempts to protect the markets. He said, we're going to help you. Maybe we would have been better off without the help. Maybe we would have been better off if we'd seen some of the institutions that were too big to fail. Maybe we should have let them fail. And maybe we should have left them fail for the last 30 or 40 years rather than protect them. There is something about the free market that is ultimately more wise. Long term, there's more wisdom in the free market than there is in a manipulative Congress or a manipulative Federal Reserve. They're not smart enough to do it. And I know if we have that free market, we have a more volatile market, more dangerous market, maybe. And yet, from a national perspective, maybe we're better off. Let the incompetent fall by the wayside. Don't protect them. Don't subsidize them. And they're talking here about the concentration of power. The concentration of power, it parallels the concept of too big to fail. We can't let these corporations are too big to fail. We've got to give them money. No, we don't. We should let them drop like stones. Once you get into this subsidizing these people, these corporations, you encourage mismanagement. You encourage a certain amount of arrogance. They think they're too big to fail. Some of us think that may be the truth of the matter. We're inclined to go along with it because the short-term danger of having some of these corporations fail and having the markets adversely impacted, the short-term danger is too much for us to, we don't want to think about it. We don't want to confront it. But when we manipulate the markets, we create a long-term danger that is ultimately, that is potentially more lethal, more damaging, more damning. Huh? In any case, I think these guys are making a brilliant point. We have a less competitive markets in large measure because the government has subsidized those markets and they have provided money to entities that are too big to fail, and the result is trouble. We'll take a break now for about 23 hours, and Melody and I will be back tomorrow. I want to thank you for listening. Hope you'll tune in again. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.